go.
It's the national edition of the Real Kipper and Bourne Show. Nick Kyprios, Justin Bourne, Sammy McKee, Derek Brandeo, Jimmy Wilson. In for Sis Boomba.
And my eclipse glass is propped up somehow.
A bunch of people outside are at the window looking up.
Looking at literal clouds.
The funniest, I actually think the funniest photo in the history of photos is the close-up of Donald Trump looking straight at the sun.
It's nothing funnier.
It's honestly, I look at it every time.
Look at it.
And that's what everybody outside is looking like.
To my fingers. It's, this doesn't count.
Well, wherever you're watching, Sportsnet, Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, Sportsnet 960 in Calgary, we're glad you're with us for the next hour. This hour, Real Kipper and Bourne, brought to you by Bet365. Mm-hmm. Special baseball edition. Jays home opener, 7:07 pitch on all Sportsnet platform, with the exception of Sportsnet 1, which will have the Toronto Maple Leafs and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Big Sportsnet night.
Big Sportsnet. In a few minutes, we're going to have Jason Greger, who hosts his show on 1440 in Edmonton, join us. We'll talk Oilers and everything out west. In the meantime, Sammy.
Yes.
Your Jays batting 193. Mm. Is there a chance on this last road trip they looked into an eclipse without glasses on that we don't know about?
Good line.
But they having a tough go. Hey, it's early. It's early.
It's early. They played some tough teams on the road.
I don't want to give my true thoughts.
No. Nope.
It's not time for my true thoughts.
No.
But there's a chance they just stink.
Nope.
No. Okay. No. They're too talented.
Yeah, I don't know.
They're too talented.
I heard. Listen, I'm a diehard listener to the show that's usually on in this spot, Blair and Barker. And Barker knows a lot.
Not a believer.
Hasn't been loving them. Let's just say that.
They can pitch, right?
Oh, yeah, they can pitch, but that's, you know, that's literally half the battle.
Yeah.
Still, I'm contemplating going down for...
Tonight.
Yeah, a few innings.
Yeah, okay.
I was promised.
I can get you a discount.
I was promised that if I go to someone's box, they're going to have the Leaf Pittsburgh game on for me.
Oh yeah,
so I can get the both.
So I'm carrying the show tomorrow. Is what you're saying?
No.
What I would if someone offered me a ticket tonight, I wouldn't go.
You wouldn't go.
Not with Pittsburgh and Toronto.
It's literally the biggest game of the year.
You're so excited.
I am so excited. Sorry, I am what I am.
Yeah, that's all right.
I'm like my coworker Bunk, who's going to the
right now. You give him Pittsburgh the odds of picking up one of the spots in the East?
I don't know.
It's
super
just,
unpredictable. Yeah, what are they, six in a row? Lost it.
You can't lose that point, that extra point to Ottawa, can you?
They hung on for dear life for that point. I mean, they needed this game, huge game, playoff race, at home against the lowly Sens. They generated 21 shots.
Oof.
Thanks for coming out. No offense at all out of Washington.
I'll tell you who I don't think is going to make it is Philly.
Yeah.
I think they've gone the other way far enough. But to me, it's any of those teams. I really have no idea. It's so hard to predict.
Dare Tortorella gets blamed at all if they...
We suck. We haven't forechecked. We haven't done anything.
If they lose the spot, will that energy go to Tortorella and go on, what kind of circus was that in the last 15 games of the season?
You know, he'll tell you he doesn't care and he doesn't regret it and he meant what he said and he'll dig in. There's no chance he's going to be remorseful and walk it back and say he should have handled it differently.
No. Are you kidding me?
But will more than us be out there going, okay, I'm not surprised.
Well, is it not the circus tamer, the lion tamer's job to calm the lions down, to cool it out, run the show? Like, he was drumming up the energy. He got them all frothy and miserable here. So, yeah, I'm going to blame him. I mean, I'm going to give him credit for getting them this far. But, boy, he's at the heart of the drop-off.
All right. It's the Jason Greger Show on Sportsnet 1440 in Edmonton. Let's welcome in Jason. Thanks for doing this, Jason. It's not often that we get a little bit of a time adjustment to our show, but we're certainly glad you're able to join us. How are you?
I'm good, fellas. Happy to be on.
Yeah, great. So give us the sense about where the standings lie and trying to predict who's going to play who and ultimately what that means for the Edmonton Oilers, because most of us thought that there was just a foregone conclusion that the Oilers and Vegas were going to match up here, but a lot of different scenarios, including what happens to the Vancouver Canucks here in the last half a dozen games.
Yeah, there's nothing really guaranteed. Edmonton, in theory, if they win all of their remaining six games, then they'll finish first automatic because they would beat Vancouver in their head-to-head matchup on Saturday. But the Canucks play Vegas tonight. You know, Vancouver's obviously reeling a little bit here without Demko. Vegas will get Hurdle back. You know, I think Edmonton is for sure guaranteed no worse than second. They're not going to get caught from behind, so I think they're going to finish second at the worst. They have a chance here. They play Vegas Wednesday, then Vancouver. They've got San Jose once, Arizona twice, who's shockingly scoring lots of goals all of a sudden, and then they finish the season with Colorado. So, you know, the odds numbers would say Edmonton's still going to finish second, but Vancouver has been slowly whittling away. The Oilers used to be, you know, 20 points back of them and Vegas, and now they're already ahead of Vegas, and you know, they've gained, I think, probably 8 or 9 points on Vancouver, maybe even more in the last month and a half. So it's crazy, man. I thought the Eastern Conference playoff race was down to three teams a week ago, and suddenly there's five in it. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't want to make a prediction because I'll probably look like an idiot.
That's kind of this business. So I look like an idiot every day.
Every day. Every day.
So the climb back would be historic, given the start to the season, to end up eventually winning the division. It would be mind-blowing. Give us the state of affairs in Edmonton. How are fans feeling about their team? How are things, does it feel like it's all positive vibes right now for a team that I would say is probably Canada's best hope at this point?
Well, you look at the Oilers and they obviously weren't as bad as their record to start the season. You know, they had a lot of things go wrong. A lot of it was self-inflicted. Obviously, then McDavid was a little bit banged up for a few games. But, you know, when they hired Knobloch and brought in Paul Coffey, there's significant changes. There's a lot of people that were questioning the Coffey hire, and I think they've been proven that was a big mistake. Paul Coffey has really changed the mindset of their defenseman. He's really instilled, you make more plays. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't want guys just dumping the puck out. He wants them to make plays. I don't care if it's Vinny Desharnais, who's your sixth defenseman, or if it's Bouchard and Ekholm in your top pair. He wants them all to make plays. And, you know, that feeds in. Edmonton's a highly skilled team. So, you know what? The best defense is a good offense. When you have the puck, you don't have to defend. And I think that's really been their mindset. I do think the Oilers team, this is their deepest and best team they've had. You know, the last few years, I just think they're deeper overall. I think they got more experience. They've got a little bit of sandpaper throughout their lineup in Perry and Sam Carrick and, you know, Evander Kane and, you know, even Adam Henrique. I don't mind, you know, how he competes. You know, they've got more experience on the back end. Like Edmonton, really, they've been the best team in the NHL since Knobloch took over. There should be lots of reasons for their fans to be positive. Now, Dallas, like to me, Dallas and Edmonton are the two best teams in the West right now. I think the Dallas Stars are really good. And but, you know, they wouldn't meet Edmonton until the third round. So Edmonton has, I think, a little bit of an advantage because they don't have to face Colorado or Dallas right away. And that's not taking anything away from Vancouver or Vegas. But Vegas is a defending champs, guys, but they're not playing like defending champs. Like they haven't been a dominant team basically since the middle of November, right? They've been an average team.
Right.
And I don't believe you could just snap your fingers and turn it on in the postseason. I'm not a big believer in that. So I think Edmonton, they know how to beat LA if they have to play them. Vancouver doesn't have a ton of experience. Like if I was picking today, regardless of who meets in the first round, I think Dallas and Edmonton would be my two teams to meet in the Western Conference final.
We're talking to Jason Greger, host of the Jason Greger Show on Sports 1440 in Edmonton. Jason, if we look back, and you mentioned a few names, additions this season, Perry, Henrique, when you compare it to, say, even like Vegas or Dallas with Tanev, did the Oilers do enough at the trade deadline that really warrants this is our year, this has to happen here, specifically on the blue line?
Well, there was lots of talk about the blue line, and I think Chris Tanev, he was the best right defenseman to acquire. I don't think Edmonton, if you wanted to upgrade on Cody Ceci, I understand it. But a top four defenseman, I don't believe any of the other right defensemen who got moved would have been upgrades significantly on DC to, you know, when you throw in cap space and would have limited some other moves. I just didn't see it. Chris Tanev was that guy, and I don't believe Calgary was ever trading Chris Tanev to Edmonton. I just don't think it was going to happen. So, like, if Chris Tanev wins a cup in Dallas, Calgary fans are like, oh, that's good. If Chris Tanev wins a cup in Edmonton, they're hating it. That plays into it sometimes for teams because I don't think, you know, Edmonton was going to grossly overpay more than what Dallas offered to get him. So I actually thought Edmonton's, you know what, they addressed some of their needs, that they got more depth. You know, Adam Henrique's a really smart player. Edmonton didn't need more offense. They needed guys who are very sound two-way players, and that's what Henrique is. Corey Perry obviously cost them nothing when they brought him in. And, you know, he brings in, I think, some added grit. He brings in a lot of experience, and I do think that is important come playoff time. I didn't see another right defenseman for me that was a clear upgrade over Cody Ceci when you look at what it would have cost to get him.
So one of the just the small storylines for the Oilers. Corey Perry comes in. You know, we've talked about the Leafs quite a bit and how they don't really have this like veteran guy to grab someone else and say, hey, you know, we need you to do this or be better or whatever. He gets into it a little bit with Evander Kane. Have seen Draisaitl maybe give it to Kane a little bit here and there. Tell us a little bit about where that dynamic is at with, Kane's, I don't know if you'd call them struggles or not, but where the Oilers are with those sort of interpersonal relationships.
Well, and, you know, Nick obviously has been in rooms. He's won cups. I think I kind of laugh a little. I don't think that was anything.
No.
Like, Perry and Kane were kind of both chuckling. They're like, we're teammates in our master's pool together. I actually think it's a good sign when players hold each other accountable. Now, in a perfect world, would you want that done behind closed doors? Sure. But we don't live in a perfect world. Perry's obviously upset. Kane didn't really bite back or anything. He just kind of nodded. Right. And away they went. So I think it's a good sign that the play that Perry got upset about was Kane just made a hope pass to the slot, right? Now, it didn't result in a goal against. And I think it's more that if you want to win, the standard is you can't make hope passes. Because if you start doing that, that's when goals happen. And if I look at Edmonton last year, the year before, they've always been the best team at beating themselves. They could throw a grenade in their own zone better than anyone. And, like, they'd have the game in complete control, and then, grenade happens, and it's two goals against in a minute. And they're like, what the hell happened? Go look at the Vegas series last year. Look at how many times the Oilers gave up goals in quick succession, or they gave up goals on just a bad giveaway that's what I call a gift goal. And they've done a much better job of limiting that. And I think the fact that Perry, that was a terrible second period for Edmonton too, so I think that played part in it. But I think there's a guy saying, guys, our standard, we have to be living up to our standard all the time. And we can't just accept that the hope pass didn't work. And yes, it didn't result in a goal again. So I actually kind of view it as a positive, really. Kane, no question, he was struggling. He went 21 games without a goal before he scored twice. In the game last week, and they need Evander. Kane doesn't need to be a leader on their team. He just needs to be a good complementary player, and he needs to show up with his physicality, which he's done for the most part this season, and obviously he's got to chip in some goals. Like, I don't expect him to score 15 goals in the playoffs like he did 2 years ago, or 13 and 15, whatever it was, but they need him to be a regular contributor, and more importantly, just don't be a guy who's just going to give away pucks. Don't be hope passing. And if you looked at Kane, that's an area of his game that I still see sometimes. He's not a great passer, right? And that's not a knock. That's just a reality. That's not his go-to thing. So play to your strengths, but don't accentuate your weaknesses. And that's kind of what I took from that interaction.
And the weight of Corey Perry, who's won a Stanley Cup, who knows what it takes and how, despite a limited role on this hockey club, how much weight that carries when Corey Perry's telling you that.
Oh, I think it matters a lot. And it's not he's won the cup, but he's lost, what, like three, right? Like, he's been in the finals with Montreal and Dallas and Tampa Bay. And I remember Connor McDavid telling me when Duncan Keith joined their team in 2022, it was such an eye-opener for him and how Keith, just how he would say things in the room at key times in the series, because it gets so emotional, right? You win a game in the playoffs, oh, my God, we're the best. And then you lose a game, and it's like, oh, my God, we're the worst, right? And Duncan Keith just had a way of, McDavid said, really calming them down. And he learned a lot from it. And I think, the Oilers themselves, they lost in the conference final. I know they didn't win a game, but they still lost in the conference final. Then they lost to Vegas last year. They've had some lumps. And usually the teams that learn from those have success. It doesn't guarantee, because if you lose a few times, you're going to win. Ask the San Jose Sharks. But you have to learn from it. I think Edmonton's best players have. But I think having a guy like Corey Perry in a certain key situation at a time in a series, he's likely going to be able to give some wisdom that the other guys just don't have.
I'm tempted to throw this to you like Ron McLean and just say, Jason, Stu Skinner. But where is Skinner's game at? How do you feel about him heading into the playoffs?
Now, it's funny you ask that, because I had a really good conversation with Stu today about, Stu's a really cerebral guy. He reaches out. He asks a lot of questions to people. He's talked to Grant Fear. He's talked to Mike Smith. He's talked to a lot of other guys, just kind of going through the playoff thing. And I know there's a lot of talk about him being fatigued physically. He wasn't tired at all. He said it many times. Now, was there some mental fatigue in there? I think there was a little bit. And he said he learned a lot last year from the postseason. You know, this year, if you look at Stuart Skinner's numbers since Knobloch took over, guys, like he's got the most wins in the league. He's top five in save percentage. He's top five in goals against among starters. Like, he's really good. He's pretty consistent. So, and Stu Skinner, he's a big believer in, he reads a lot on mental toughness and just kind of how to eliminate the roller coasters if you can. It's hard to do, but he's a big believer in that. And I think they've really monitored his games here down the stretch, not so much for the physical fatigue, it's the mental fatigue, because he is their guy going in the playoffs. And, you know, I don't think they're going to be rotating him and Calvin Pickard. I think once the playoffs start, it's going to be Stu Skinner going every time. And little things like he learned, like he thought he stayed on the ice a little bit too long on off days, right? And not because he was physically tired, it's just mentally, right? Because then you get off on a morning skate, and rather than be off right away, maybe you're staying out 20 extra minutes, then it's less time, because then you get to the rink, and sometimes you start to prepare 2-3 hours before the game. And he just said it was mentally draining, and you didn't have enough time away. So there's little things, you know, in his approach that he learned last year. But I think, like Vegas showed, in Colorado the last 2 years, they didn't win the cup. Like Vasilevsky, obviously, is elite. But Colorado and Vegas didn't win the cup with a goalie who was proven elite. Now, Adin Hill played very well, but they also had a good structure in front of him. And I think, you know, Skinner's shown he can be a good goalie, and definitely can be a better goalie when the team in front of him limits their chances. And that's what Edmonton's done. Like, Edmonton, I think, is, from Sport Logic, they're, what, fourth best as far as high-danger chances? And that includes the first 13-game guys when they were, like, one of the worst teams. So I think Skinner is good enough when you consider, like, there's question marks with Demko. There's injury problems in Vegas. You know, I'm not sold on Cam Talbot or David Rittich. You know, Jake Oettinger is starting to play like Jake Oettinger, but he hadn't for the first 65 games, you know. Like, outside of Hellebuck, there's no, like, I know exactly what I'm going to get from my goaltender in the West.
Right.
So, Winnipeg, Hellebuck, is this guy going to have to be great every night for Winnipeg to get to a conference final?
Oh, I think so. Like, they have, like, if you look at all the teams in the league, is there a team that might have a tougher path than them? Because if they, right now, it looks like they're probably going to play Colorado. Now, they actually could still catch them, right? Because they have the tiebreaker and they're 2 points back with the game in hand. So maybe they could get home ice. That would probably help them, because Colorado on home ice is an absolute wagon. But I look at the Jets. Their trouble all year, guys, is kind of the same thing we've seen. Like, they don't match the high-end offense of Vancouver or Edmonton or Colorado. And then they don't have the depth of Dallas. So they're going to need Hellebuck to be unbelievable. And he has been all year long. I think it's hard to win a series with just great defense. Like, even Vegas, like, they would score 6 goals a game sometimes to win, right? Florida did it too. Like, so that's my one concern about the Jets, is will they have enough offense come playoff time against the other good teams? And, like, you got to beat Colorado. Then you probably have to beat Dallas. God, that's pretty tough.
All right, it should be an interesting half a dozen games or so to close this thing out. Jason, really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We'll do this again.
Hey, boys, anytime, man. I love it. I watch your show. I appreciate it.
Right. Thanks, Jason. Jason, appreciate your Gregor. Time. I didn't say that very well. Appreciate your time, though.
Are you going?
Do you care?
No.
No, it's okay. I'll hang in there for the segment here.
What's
finish
the deal?
It's Eclipse time.
Go. This guy. Okay,
put your glasses on. Show everybody, like. What a nerd you are. There you go.
I don't think anyone who knows me doubted that.
I mean, why don't we go to break so Borny can go out, and then we'll come back and do everything when we come back.
Well, don't hurt yourself.
I'm going to take the glasses. It'll be all right. It sounds like it's, yeah.
Let's go.
All right.
Let's go to break and go check it out.
I got to go.
Let him go. Let the man go.
I can't believe I'm doing this. But we're going to break to go check something out that we...
He's gone.
All right. All right. Hey, everybody come back. We're going to get an update from our Eclipse analyst, Justin Bourne. After the break, more Real Kipper and Bourne. Wear glasses.
Teeing up the biggest games of the night, it's the Fan Pregame with Ailish Forfar and Justin Cuthbert.
Weekdays at 6 p.m. on Sportsnet 590 The Fan, and wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome back to the Real Kipper and Bourne Show, where we broke early to witness an historic eclipse. Where did everybody go? Wow. Is this thing on?
I told you.
I will say something.
No.
Oh, we're not back.
All right, here we go. We're back. After witnessing an historic eclipse. Where did everybody go? I can't see.
Oh, well, thanks for the break.
It was dark.
Guys. It was very dark.
That was kind of neat.
It's crazy. It's all like, that never happens. It never gets dark. It was like 8 p.m. Oh, it happens every day.
That's our winter.
It's one of those things where it's like, yeah, you know, we didn't get to see it. We missed out.
I will say it was very, as I'm being very facetious,
yeah.
Walking out of the studio and looking out there and having it be pitch black was extremely jarring.
You can see how people feel like it's the end of the world.
Absolutely.
And we walked out. There must have been 100 people out there from the Rogers building,
yeah,
who need any excuse to get away from their work.
Any excuse for
anything at all.
Yeah. Is that what we're going out for? Yeah. Eclipse.
Quick dart. All right.
Don't you feel silly that you totally wasted 68 cents on a pair of glasses?
No regrets. Got to try, man. Got to try.
So game time, boys?
Game time.
All right. It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app, the latest odds, to find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. So I'll wait till a little later in the week to start getting into the Masters odds. But it is Masters week.
Masters week.
My favorite week of the year.
Also mine.
You know, you got some four great Leaf games this week. You got the national championship in hoops this week. NBA playoffs are starting. We're getting towards it. And we got the
Jay's home opener.
Didn't include that for a reason. And the Masters. Scottie Scheffler has approached Tiger Woods territory when it comes to odds. He is plus 375 to win the Masters.
Imagine being plus 375 to win the Masters and you're putting so weirdly. You're switching to a mallet putter. You're trying anything to make putts. Yeah. And it's like, what if he was making putts?
So he doesn't need to be good at putting.
No.
He needs to be like a little bit below average.
He throws, it's like dart throwing for him.
It's ridiculous.
160, 180 out.
And how do you do that under pressure with your feet flailing all over the place? Like
He's my favorite guy to watch. Like, he's the best golfer in the world, and he's the best guy to watch because he's just...
He's golfing.
He's not a robot. He's a weird man throwing his arms around. So, yeah. So I just wanted to bring that up. The next thing I wanted to bring up with you guys is the reach the playoff odds.
Ooh.
So the Detroit Red Wings are minus 140 to make the playoffs, plus 110 to miss. The New York Islanders are minus 270 to make it, plus 210 to miss. They are believing in your... Isles there, Borny.
Tough schedule.
The Flyers are plus 450 to make it, and they are minus 700 to miss. They're really on the same page as us.
That's nice.
Pittsburgh Penguins plus 160 to make it, minus 200 to miss, and they're really giving up on the Caps too, plus 300 to miss, minus 400 to make it.
So whose spot is it to lose?
Great question.
Detroit's, Pittsburgh's, or Washington's?
Honestly, Kip, it might be the one you didn't mention,
Islanders.
The Islanders have the Rangers twice down the stretch, which, very good hockey team. Their last game of the year is against Pittsburgh.
They got Philly, too, and Ottawa.
Islanders?
Sorry. I was looking down wrong New York column here.
Yeah. New York, Montreal, New York, yes. New Jersey, Pittsburgh for the Islanders. So,
wow. Last game of the year is Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
That could be it right there.
Holy smokes, man.
I know.
That's awesome.
And what's so crazy is Philly and the Capitals play in the last game of the year, which was supposed to be a big game and may not be by the time we get there.
Last year, Pitt blew it to Columbus.
Chicago.
In the last
two games of the year.
And that's the
reason their spot.
And that's the reason the Leafs got smoked in the second round of the playoffs, because of those two games.
Thanks, Pittsburgh. Actually is.
Yes, thanks, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
There's no way that Pitt would go all this way to lose to the Islanders and lose a second year in a row on the last game.
But maybe.
And only two games on the ice tonight. Two really good games. Leafs, Penguins, Vegas, Canucks.
Vegas, Canucks is massive, too.
Huge stakes. I am looking at the Penguins. If you're any Dubas fearing man, Leaf fan like myself. You know, I love the Happiness Hedge. We're heading into Happiness Hedge season with the Leafs playing in the playoffs. Made lots of money on them last year.
Montreal beat Toronto.
Oh, I was rich.
Made like
$500. I was rich. I was very rich. +125 is a great number for the Penguins if you're thinking about a Happiness Hedge, betting against your favorite Leafs in case of Dubas winning. So +125, and I love the Vegas Golden Knights at +105 in Vancouver tonight. Vancouver's scuffling. They're having concerns. So those are the two are on the ice tonight. And that was Game Time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. And now, Kipper, this segment of Real Kipper and Bourne is brought to you by Hyundai.
All right.
Awesome. Thank you to our sponsors. We appreciate it.
Hurdle.
Mm. Tomash.
Tomash. Okay. How important could this pickup be for Vegas starting tonight?
I mean, this is a big deal for them, as mentioned, that they are kind of, you know, not looking like the Vegas we expected them to be this season. They get another score. One of Vegas's major issues this season is they don't score. They don't score as well as even Winnipeg, Dallas, Florida, Carolina, Nashville. Like, they need offense. So this is a big addition.
Just not Hurdle, though. Hanifin and Mantha. Like, I just look at the Edmonton Oilers, and I think there's got to be a part of that room that goes, ugh.
Could have used one of those people.
Could have used one more. Yeah. And I get, you know, we just had Jason Greger on, and he talked about...
He's great, by the way.
Talked about Tanev, and maybe that never was a real option for Edmonton. I think at this stage of where Edmonton is, I would have seriously considered overpaying for Tanev.
But I think the point Jason's making is that, like, Conroy doesn't want to come in as a new GM and trade a good player to the Oilers that puts him over the top to win a cup, let alone to Brad Tree Living to help them out.
But if it included, I don't know, Broberg and a higher pick than what he went to Dallas, then...
I know. The right thing to do is make your team as good as possible and not worry about other teams. I know that. Yeah.
But at the core of it, I'm, like, talking from a fan's perspective, what Greger said is bang on. Like, if I... Yeah, be pissed.
The Habs are this close to getting to winning and you trade them Riley for the run or something.
Yeah, it's like, oh my God, what? Why?
I think we just got to live in that era where it just doesn't matter if you have to... I think that rivalry can be overrated if it means that you're not trading for the best that you can trade.
I guess it depends what the difference is. Like, what's the overpay? Is it a slightly better pick? Because if it's close, you're not trading it that player to
close. I get it. Close, I understand.
So you have to go quite a bit over the next best offer.
Yes.
Yeah. And you still think it would have been worth it?
Yeah. I would have gone a first for Tanev.
Yeah.
I would have. I know it's a gamble. I know it's a big gamble, but if this guy can stay healthy, and you just said it before our show started, you're like, Tanev in Dallas.
I watched
Is it not taking them maybe to another level?
I watched a big part of the Dallas-Colorado game yesterday, which is just breakneck pace. It was like, holy smokes. Like, it felt like the camera couldn't even keep up. Like, they're flying up and down the ice. But, like, you know, he's +1 in a 7-4 game last night. He has an assist. He's never going to light up the score sheet.
No.
But, God, does he control the play.
Yeah.
Like, the way the entries, like the way he gets it out, the way he retrieves. Just, what was it, the number you said last week? 61% of the expected goals while he's on the ice?
Yeah, since he's been there.
That to me, I talked about it at the deadline. That to me is the one that got away for a lot of teams. Like, the fact that Dallas got him is, you know, and I still say this. I want the Leafs to sign him in the offseason. Like, I'm willing for them to overpay to get him.
Really?
Yes. I love him. Wow. I love his game.
So Dallas has 4 games left. They have a shot. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, just to touch on you, I listen to what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I think that there's some teams, and I may include Toronto in this, that part of the reason why they probably didn't push as hard on Tanev is knowing that they may have to overpay to keep him. Mm-hmm. And I threw out a number between 4.5 and 5 million on a multi-year deal. 3 or 4 years.
Like,
there's some teams that won't go $16 or $20 million for Tanev. I think Ottawa would. Question is, does he want to go to Ottawa?
Well, you know, this is off-season talk, but I just want to follow up on one thing. We often talk about how players will pick, like, say, Florida because of the tax advantage or, you know, whatever. Some guys want to play where their family is. You know, you go around the beaches here in Toronto and, like, you'll see in the summer, you'll see Tanev there wearing his baby in a sling living down by, you know, like, he's from here.
Yeah.
I have to imagine that there would be interest on his part in taking a couple of bucks less to do it, you know, rather than outbidding the next highest team. But that doesn't seem to happen here. But no, in theory, you would think.
That's the type of guy that I would overpay for. I love Tanev. I've loved him his whole career, and I wish he was a Leaf right now because they would be a wholly different squad with him back there. So,
and he changed Dallas, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
Concerns on the Canucks moving forward here and where the true expectations lie for him, for them starting in game one.
So I read Ian McIntyre's piece today, and Ian Cole was saying about how there's definitely concerns and all this sort of stuff. Yeah, he went on for like I tried to find the audio of it, but I think maybe he just said it to writers. I couldn't dig up the audio, but he went on talking about how they're not panicking, but there's a level of concern or whatever. And I guess Ian took that to talk it and asked him a question. I think we have the clip there, Derek, if you want to play it.
We've been talking and asking you a lot about sort of the team being in a slump, for lack of a better term, but it's like 22 games now where you've been a 500 team. Does that concern you?
No, I just look at this game. I don't care about what's in the past. We got 5 games before the playoffs start, so you analyze this game. I don't care what happened in the past. Tonight, like I said, we gave them too much. They didn't give them a lot of stuff, but when they did, their conversion rate was great. We didn't. We had some chances. We had a couple of breakaways. We had somebody in the high slot, and we, you know, if we connect, and then we gave them those freebies early. It's 2-0. So, no, I'm just analyzing this game.
I think
so. Not concerned.
Getting Demko back and hitting a certain level makes him still very dangerous.
Yes,
but I know we can say that about any team at any time. But it almost as if the goaltending conversation the last few years has gone from like doesn't have to be the most important guy, but has to
just
can't be bad. Yeah. I think the pendulum's coming back. I think your goalie in the first round will have to be the most important guy.
Yeah.
And I include Skinner over McDavid, and I include Samsonov over Austin Matthews.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. From what I've witnessed in the last 2 weeks, you win with great goaltending, and if the other team's guy sucks, they lose. I don't care. I don't care who you are.
Yeah.
Colorado, Gorgiev. You think they're going anywhere with that guy?
No, I
don't. No worries about him, eh?
Well, I mean, yesterday.
Gave up what, touchdown?
Yeah, 6 before, too. I think they've really
played their worst 2 defensive games of the year, Colorado. But in saying that, like, goalies have to be the best player on the ice right now for teams to advance.
It's funny because you look at where Western Conference teams were a month ago compared to now. Colorado, couple of tough nights. Vegas, not quite where you thought they'd be. Canucks, not quite at the same level. Jets, not quite. You know, like, there's plenty of good teams, and still the Stars are great, and Oilers are humming. Like, I'm not worried about any of these teams suddenly being bad. But it just felt like they had 5 teams in full control who are now kind of trying to find it a little bit.
Gorgiev's last 5 has been 4 goals, 2, 4, 6, 6. So it's a lot of starting to go in the net. I mean, he's played every game. Like, how many? He's played 60 games this year.
Has he actually?
Yes.
Oh.
It's like, at some point, that's going to catch up with you. No one plays 60
anymore. Steve Berger made a comment like a couple weeks ago about how we baby our goalies too much now. And
it's just, there's nothing that old athletes like more than talking about how bad the other generation was. It happens in hoops all the time. It happens in hockey. Happens in baseball. It's just, it's a classic thing. Hope it never changes. It's awesome.
You know, and the thing that can never be underestimated here is just they're all talented guys in net who can play when the pressure is on, who buckles, who finds a way to, I don't know, get hurt. I don't know.
You look at a guy like Demko, right? Whose playoff experience has been very good. Mm-hmm. You know, he's been a good player in those moments.
That's what concerns me about Florida. is that
Bob has done
he
that
broke
too.
Through last year where he was bad in playoffs in years past, and that was a huge storyline for them going into last year. Can he keep it up? Is he? And then he was just lights out.
Yeah,
it's like that is what concerns me, that he kind of broke through on that.
They've had a bad stretch here, Florida.
For sure.
And he's had a bad stretch. He was no good here in Toronto last week.
But I really don't worry about them being able to turn it back on. I saw them play
it
Boston
is, though,
on Saturday.
It is, to your point, talking about Florida, that it is the opposite of how they're heading into playoffs from the year before, where it was the Penguins' route of scrape and claw to get in.
And the other one, too, for me, keep an eye on, Freddie Anderson in Carolina.
He's been unbelievable since he came back.
I know.
Like, ridiculous numbers.
But the chips aren't down right now.
But preach it to the choir.
We'll see.
Preach it to the choir.
Maybe this is his year. Maybe it is. If it is, then, boy, oh, boy, you like Carolina in so many other ways.
Absolutely.
So if you look around the NHL at remaining schedules, you know, Florida is a good example where they have Thursday, Saturday, Tuesday, four games left, and then a nice break at the end of their season schedule. The Leafs, the Oilers, and the Golden Knights are the only teams who will play six games in their final 10 nights.
It's a lot of hockey.
And so I want to get your thoughts on how to manage that. Like, where do you feel like players need to play? Where do they need rest?
Yeah.
What do you want to see out of those guys?
Well, I think there's a fine line. If we take, like, the Toronto Maple Leafs, for instance, you've got a guy feeling it right now in Austin Matthews, and you've got a legitimate look at 70. Like, that's a big deal.
Is it?
Kipper, you're historically, the number one guy who says it doesn't matter.
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay, for me, it doesn't matter. Okay, but to him, it does.
But to him and to many fans, and it's there, it's reachable. Mm-hmm. Like, I like Austin Matthews' game the last little while. Has he gotten lucky a little bit? Is he getting that, does he have the Midas touch right now where we saw Saturday night? Turns and spins and throws one in the middle and it banks off a skate and it goes in. He's feeling it right now. But he doesn't appear to me as a guy that's stressed or changed. I like the look of his game.
Okay.
It's not a selfish look. So he's gonna push on. I don't see him feeling this wave of play, confidence, getting a couple of lucky bounces to go up to Sheldon and say, hey, take me out the last game. I need a rest.
I mean, he should if they're fine. Like, if they can't change their spot, they can't change who they play, they can't climb up, whatever, and he's 5 goals or whatever from 70.
But he's not going to be that.
4 goals from 70, then he should definitely take a knee.
Look who they play this week. Pittsburgh. You know, they're good. But then Devils twice, who he owns. I feel like he scores all the time against the Devils. He scores all the time against everyone. And then Detroit on Saturday, where he got his 60th against them last year. He scores against them all the time.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be at 67 or 68 by the time we get to Saturday. I'm telling you right now.
Well, that will change things.
And Sheldon has, and many coaches, they'll go to their third and fourth lines, and they'll try to keep their stars under 20 minutes. And if Boston can keep scoring and play 18, 19 minutes moving forward, but it's not at 22 or 23 anymore. That's the only thing.
A back-to-back versus... So they play on April 13th, the Detroit Red Wings. Then they have 2 games left from then till the end of the season. It's a Florida-Tampa back-to-back. Mm-hmm. You don't need both those games, assuming you're fine in the schedule. So what are you playing for?
But
have we not done this?
Coming back to the question that I've been asking you guys for 4 months, that I've been worried about this pursuit. Meaningless game, 68 goals. Last game of the season.
He's watching.
No chance.
You're trying to win a Stanley Cup. You've done the goals thing.
Boys, there is 0% chance he's
If he's one even strength goal from the most even strength goals in a season in like 40 years. He'll have all kinds of records.
Okay.
70 is just a round, silly
Would
number.
Would you like to make
a
wager?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
We'll talk offline. Put a pin in that.
We will.
What do we make of where you got anywhere else you want to
Brady.
Go?
Yeah, Brady. You do Brady?
Oh,
yes. Oh, yeah, Brady.
Oh, finally.
What is with empty net goals now upsetting everybody?
All right, let's paint the big picture about stuff like this.
Yeah.
In a game, if there's and a whistle, and after the whistle goes, you shoot the puck in the other team's net, they're mad, right? They're mad.
Yeah.
Right, at the end of warm-up, if you shoot the puck all the way down the ice into the other team's end, they're mad. They're like, you know, keep it on your own half. You don't need to shoot on our end. Just, you know, do your own thing. It is a thing in hockey where it's like, we're just protecting our own net at all costs. Now, that one where they scored on Ottawa, the empty netter, he lets it slide into the net at the end of the game.
That's Hischier.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine caring about that.
Mm.
Game's over. Like, it's a, not like he made a big statement about it. He didn't even shoot. He just let it go.
Kipper?
I didn't mind it. I thought Brady overreacted. I think it was
too much. How does he not have the context of the Greg thing in his head?
I'm okay with Brady going to talk to him or even just skating up, but the frantic kind of end of the world reaction was too showy for me.
Yeah.
That's all.
I thought both reactions, Greg and Brady Tkachuk, were completely appropriate.
Oh my God, what?
That, I think what Hischier did was borderline worse than what Greg did.
What did he do? He's on a breakaway and he let the puck
the
go.
The game was over. It ended.
We do not agree.
The whistle had gone, the buzzer went, and he still put it in the net.
He would have had to actively try to avoid it going in the net at that point.
The thing that kills me is the Sens fans having to just do mental gymnastics to try to justify one versus the other. It's beautiful. Yeah. Like, I have not enjoyed many things more on X outside of Eclipse memes than that.
It's 2024, I think, and I live that era where, like, these little stupid little things are unwritten rules where, you know, disrespecting us or, you know, following the code or whatever you want to call it. I just didn't see that as, like, causing World War III.
You know what's funny is we started, was it this hour or the last hour, talking about Vladdy smiling after striking out in a big spot? Was it this hour?
No, I don't know, whenever it was.
But, like, and your point was, like, that's baseball, though. Like, it's not hockey sensibilities where if you blow it, you're not supposed to be laughing on the bench.
Yeah.
I will tell you, I got yelled at by my own coaches for laughing in serious moments more than anything else in my career. So I kind of was always annoyed by that in hockey. Mm. The baseball thing is one thing, but in basketball, after a play, guys shoot all the time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
No, it's different.
I know it's different, but it's like, why is it different?
Because
the sport has decided it's fine.
You know when people get really pissed off in basketball? When the game is in hand and they're supposed to be dribbling out the clock.
And someone tries to run it up.
So that's the same parallel. And I forget who it was that did it. I think it was Caron Butler did it to a guy in the Raptors in a meaningless game when they were already up. And he came over to, like, shake hands and he stole the ball and ran down and dunked it. And they were already going to lose. I get it, and I think, you know, truth serum, you're asking Hischier. You did it to piss him off. 100%. You skate down, and the game is over.
He doesn't care about Ottawa.
The horn has gone.
Yeah.
And you...
Listen.
He did that to piss him off.
To Sammy's point, like, you know, if you're going to shovel it in the net long after a whistle, somebody's going to say something. Something's going to be... There's going to be some repercussions to it.
Yeah.
Whether it's just an F you from afar
or
I'm going to get you next time.
Okay.
Whatever the case is, you know something's coming. So he was willing to go down that path.
Yeah.
I just think that if Brady could have took something off of the reaction, he still could have sent the same message and the same kind of feel, like, without looking like... it's the worst thing in the world to ever happen to us.
And I will say this, though. Like, I like that Brady hasn't rolled over on the Sens. That he still cares, right? Like, it'd be very easy season over.
But just to go back to my earlier point about it being a little too showy at this point, it's like, buddy...
You're watching it,
aren't you? Your team has so underachieved this year. You were supposed to be... If not in the playoffs, be one of those
teams
fighting for it right now.
One of the crappy teams.
That's exactly.
You guys lost your playoff spot when you lost six in a row in December. Now you act like this.
Yep.
Where was that in December?
It's been there from Brady all season.
Well, no,
it's never not been there.
He literally always acts like this.
you know, I don't know.
But I'm not talking about Brady. I'm talking about the team.
Yeah.
And he represents the team.
Mm.
So, right? Again, it's like it's too late, Brady, for this reaction. And I'm sorry. I'm not. I know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
But you cannot separate yourself from 19 other guys. You're all painted under one brush for me.
Yeah.
And for me, it's too late.
Yeah. It's way too late.
For that type of reaction.
But I agree.
That puck gets put in way after the whistle.
For sure. That's what I mean. That's what
5 seconds after.
There's a term I love to use for some people who act a little bit over the thing. It was very extra. Very extra. But it was almost as though like he had to like show that he was pissed off about it.
Yeah.
But
to prove a point.
Yes.
Right? That we're not going away quietly. And
Sens fans can no longer complain about the Morgan Riley reaction, huh?
This is almost too good to be true.
Like, empty net goals with the Ottawa Senators.
Yeah.
They
should be worrying about getting someone a goal.
So, yeah. How about finishing a game with a goalie in it?
Fair enough.
Did you guys see Steve Cazzari get hit by Hayden Fleury and that Pens Lightning game?
Neutral zone there.
Mm. Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah, he's okay. Expected to make a full recovery or whatever. To me, it's amazing. Like, this is one of my standard takes in
NHL.
This is
the George Costanza, you can't believe more planes don't crash?
I can't believe how little you notice the four extra guys out there.
Yeah.
Like, the job that NHL refs do.
They're pros.
To stay out of the way and not involve themselves. Sometimes they involve themselves and they call stupid penalties, but they're just never really in the way. Mm-hmm. Like, once every couple games, maybe. But that was as hard as I've ever seen a ref get hit. It was awful.
Yeah.
Awful.
Thoughts with him. Hope he's doing well.
Yeah. But they're really, to your point, they're really good at that. They, you know, they're along the wall 6 feet. They're dodging. They split D-men, right?
Yeah,
they're
like, you know what always kills me is when
they're really good.
When a ref has like a spot on the wall and a guy goes to dump it in and hits the ref and yells at the ref, it's like, he was there.
Yeah, it's like, where would you like him to go,
he's
buddy?
He's got to be somewhere. So, you know, a little bit of vision. You guys always blame the linesman for that. Other injury to report there, Mikko Rantanen hard by Mattias Ekholm, hit his head on the ice. I mean, a massive blow to Colorado. I don't know how long he'll be out.
Yeah, no, he's...
concussion protocol, missed last night against Dallas.
I heard, he's been back on the ice. He's working out.
Okay.
And more precautionary than anything. Like, I don't know. I mean, we've seen before 24, 48, 72 hours, all of a sudden somebody doesn't feel well again. But as of now, he's well on his on the road to recovery here.
Now, Jack Johnson goes to fight him after that. Yeah. And Ekholm's like, "What am I? I'm not. It's a hit. It's
he
a
had
clean
the
hit.
Puck on his stick, and I hit him.
It's the cleanest hit.
Yeah.
I mean, he times it well. He almost pulls back from like extra running him, the way Rantanen goes down, he hits his head on the ice. I thought it was a great decision by Ekholm, not being like, "Oh, I have to stand up for myself for that one." Great play by him.
Yeah.
Unfortunate bounce for Rantanen.
Stupid for Jack Johnson to get a penalty for what he did.
Yeah, Louis DeBrusque on the broadcast was like, you know, like the guy's allowed to go over and say he doesn't like his guy getting concussed.
Yeah,
you know?
I didn't see anything that warranted.
Let the guys.
See, like the other thing too is like there's an element of letting the air out of the balloon a little bit. And that's what a fight can do sometimes, whether you think it's right or wrong or whatever the code is for you. But it does alleviate. But without it, now it's like, okay, what's going to happen next?
Yeah.
Right? So if an eye for an eye. So the next move, if he's not going to fight, the next move is go get Connor McDavid. Go take a run at Leon
Draisaitl. So do you think it would have been better for Ekholm to just say fine?
Sometimes it is and sometimes it isn't.
Yeah.
But that's the danger is that, okay, you run one of my great players, I'm going to go run one of yours.
Mm-hmm.
I'll slash him. I'll do whatever I can.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how things build up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how sometimes you need an outlet.
Yeah. Or you say, hey, listen, you had a problem with it. We dealt with it.
Yes, exactly.
And
now we can move on.
Yeah.
And now we're even, but we're not even.
All right,
I
got
to go get one of your guys now.
This segment of Real Kipper and Born was brought to you by Hyundai. The 2024 Santa Fe Hybrid NHL Edition is made for those who drive hockey. Only 500 available. Order yours today.
Huge night.
What a dork.
On the network.
Who? Where?
Toronto and Pittsburgh. The Jays and the Mariners. Season opener.
The Masters.
And the Masters.
We need to come in every show with tinkly music and azalea pictures on the screen.
Our thanks to Jason Greger.
Yes.
Our thanks to Phil Bork.
Absolutely.
Hope you enjoyed the early edition of Real Kipper and Bourne. We're back at our regularly scheduled time the rest of the week. I don't even know when that is.
Tomorrow.
Enjoy your night, everybody.
Tomorrow for the text.